So here we are. It's Paul Amani and Tricia Hoyt, brother and sister, and we're about to have a conversation about the year 2013. And this is a chance for Paul to talk about what this year has been for him. And so, Paul, let's just begin with the question. First thing that comes out of your mouth about 2013.
Sandwich. I have to admit it's rehearsed.
Okay.
Because I did actually think this morning about when I was thinking I'd like to talk to you about your year. I thought, God, I wonder what I'd say about my own. So I've had an unfair kind of, there's a bit of a difference between us because I sprung it on you with no notice. But sandwich is the word, and I'll explain in a way. The story I was telling myself about my year, as you kind of think coming up to Christmas, because I used to do it a lot. I used to write in the form of a poem, I used to do my act of reconciliation with the year. And I haven't done it now for a few years, but it used to be 10 or 15 pages of my notebook in verse. Free verse now, without worrying. But anyway, the story I was telling myself was that it was my annus horribilis, that it was an awful year until September. And that was, in a way, because I thought of, look, I was severely depressed for 8 months of the year. Idel, my wife, ruptured her Achilles tendon, and then when she was nearly better, snapped it. My daughter had her father go all withdrawn and barely able to handle talking with her. This is going to sound awfully dramatic, but I do think it's more true than anything else. I nearly killed myself or somebody else in a car crash.
Oof.
You know, while I was depressed. That was a story I've not actually revealed to anybody, really, in audio anyway. But that happened while I was depressed. And there were... what else? Oh, our dog. Our dog. We lost our dog as well during the year. So it was a... I nearly lost my life, I nearly lost my marriage, I nearly lost my, in a sense, I felt like I nearly lost my child. This has been a dreadful year. And then September, October, November, December, and I have to be careful that it doesn't get too excitedly brilliant, to be honest, but, have been good months, very good months. So my first story I had was, wasn't any kind of sandwich. It was basically a load of shit on top of a, if you like, combined with one decent ending. And then I thought, actually, I'm forgetting about something really important. I thought, actually, I began 2013 on a high from Jacob and Helen's wedding, which happened at the end of 2012. And I was really back from that, which happened in between Christmas and New Year. So the year actually began with the celebration of, my eldest son's marriage. And that was great, really. And, that I'll always remember as high. And then also I had been learning mindfulness and mindfulness practice and, breathing and having time in the now, in the being mode rather than the doing mode. So I had started the year feeling, excitedly positive, plus hoping that I had learned a new discipline which would help keep me well. So the year had begun well. And so that's why I now call it a sandwich, that it wasn't all doom and gloom from the beginning. It was a highly caustic filling to the sandwich.
From the let's talk about the caustic filling, and then let's talk about the sandwich pieces from within the filling. What stands out? I don't know when you're feeling unwell, whether you're in the midst of depression, whether you feel Now, there are certain things that stand out, or whether it becomes all of a blah for you. What for you would you say is...
It's more like all of a blah. I mean, what stands out for me is the terror, the sheer great fright of, oh God, I'm going down. And the effort, first of all, to kind of hope that on this particular occasion I can prevent myself going down, right? Unlike any other previous occasion, I'm sinking, and that is a terrifying experience. And it also is one that no matter how much in the past I've ever said to Adele or anybody else, as soon as I start to feel unwell, I will actually say so, and I'll admit it and share it and hope that that will help me to hold it back. I have always been so terribly disappointed, and I was so terribly disappointed, that I couldn't admit it. To her or to anybody else, that, oh, look, I'm afraid I'm going downhill.
Yeah.
So, of course, I have that terribly lonely period. Yeah. I had that terribly lonely period of intense fear.
Yeah.
And
which in turn silences you.
Silenced me, and also this kind of effort to strive to say, I'm going to get through it, I'm going to beat it, I'm going to do this, all of which is actually, I know intellectually, is self-defeating, that, you know, striving to push yourself to hold it back is only expending, you know, more energy, you know, in a way that is self-defeating, you know. So that's the first thing about it. Then it's characterized by essentially a loss of memory, meaning that I do things and I don't remember I've done them. And I literally physically lose my memory. That I can't remember what I said to you 5 minutes ago, now, in all of the conversations, I'm just trying to survive them, you know, so I don't, nothing goes in and stays, it just, everything is, how can I defend myself against the intense embarrassment of, you know, cracking up in front of this person in any way. So, and it's long debilitation, really.
It's every single day crisis, getting through just one
every day. Single day I got up in the morning, and from the moment I got up, I may have had, you know, brief fragments of relief late in the evening sometimes, when I thought the whole world has gone away and I'm alone,
and that would have been a good thing.
Well, it's like this much, you know. I drive to Grace to school in the morning, right? And, you know, there'd be massive tension, and there wouldn't be half as much chat in the car, and there'd be almost no chat in the car a lot of the times. And, you know, I would be saying to myself, God, I'm getting more and more silent with my daughter, you know. And when I was thought I was really well, I was very vigorous every day. I practically recorded audio on every car journey, probably to excess. But I'd be rushing back home after dropping her off to get into the safety of the house.
I see.
But once I was in the door of the house, I didn't experience a big relief. I experienced just the transportation of the misery indoors.
I see.
Which was more tolerable in a way, because, you know... But then all this time to fill up. So I forget the original question, to be truthful, but it was, you know, I can remember other things that happened during the year, like, you know, during it. The soup was lovely. Yes, thank you very much. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
A little water, actually. Just
I mean, the one that stands out most of all was the summer holiday in France, really, because I must have been feeling that there was some kind of a chance that I would be, that this holiday might be good for me. I remember the holiday again was a sandwich, because the first few days of the holiday were, I definitely experienced relief. Now, it was the kind of relief that I think I thought I'd have if I could run away to a place where nobody would know me, and where there would be no expectations. And somehow or other, I had in my mind that, you know, Adele would be able to tolerate me being quiet without, you know, I wouldn't fail to do the washing up. I wouldn't fail to take the clothes out of the dryer.
Mm-hmm.
I could just relax, and in theory I could just sit and read a book all day. Well, never quite like that, but so the first few days were good.
Yeah.
Then the middle period, including the time when Jacob and Helen were over, by the way, became very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It really did, and I felt. And then the last few days, it lifted and got a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And then the miraculous kind of thing was that after the holiday, and that we finished the holiday towards the very end of August, I came back to a world where I thought, oh, shit, I've been off work for the whole, all this mm-hmm. length of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jonathan, who was the most tolerant person imaginable, I might come back to that later mm-hmm. on, but just inquired about whether I would be able to come in mm-hmm. and say hello even.
Yeah.
And then going on from the holiday, I mm-hmm. went back to work for half a day and stayed a whole day, and I went in for a second half day and I mm-hmm. stayed a whole day, and I ended up staying, you know, every day except one day I took off in September, you know.
Mm-hmm. When you went in for the half day, was that because you were feeling better, or it was not actually because you were feeling better, it was simply because Jonathan said, would you be able to come in?
No, it was definitely because I was feeling better.
Ah, okay.
But, you know, there was no way I would have gone in if I had been feeling like the way I had been earlier. I wouldn't have gone in even if, you know, no matter who said to me, or no matter who pushed me or pulled me
mm-hmm.
to go in. There was no way I would have done that. So even though I didn't, I felt myself to be very, very nervous. Mm-hmm. I had lost my memory. Mm-hmm. I had lost my capacity for rational thought.
Yeah.
All my faculties had gone. I was no longer able to write. Yeah. I was no longer able to talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were all gone.
Yeah.
And so I was going into work thinking that I won't be able to concentrate on anything.
Right.
So I decided, look, I'm going in for half a day as an experiment.
Yeah.
And I'm actually only going in to breathe the air that I will breathe in work.
Yeah.
I'm not actually going in to do anything. And anyway, I'm so out of touch with what has been going on,
mm-hmm.
I won't have to do anything. Yeah. I'll just be asking, well, what's been happening?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And no one will expect anything of me.
Mm.
So, yeah, so it was...
That sounds like it functioned as a fairly safe transition for you.
Oh, God, yeah. But that safety was created by Jonathan, my business partner, to be honest, because you wouldn't believe the absence of pressure that he put on me.
Wow.
And the total understanding that he conveyed that there was... this whole state of depression I was in would last an indeterminate length of time.
Wow.
I mean, he signaled that, you know... very early on that I mightn't even be back this year, you know, that he was completely open
mm-hmm.
to when I was back, I was back.
Mm-hmm.
Not like most people would have hoped that I would get better, but they might have an expectation that, look, a couple of months you'll be okay, you know, get on your tablets and they'll, you know, you'll be okay.
Yeah, people have a tendency to timeline us in our lives.
Yeah, I mean, humans are always looking for some degree of certainty.
Right.
And so one way of getting certainty is to say, oh, the arc of this experience is approximately that long.
Yeah. Even and what you're saying is he didn't.
He didn't at all.
Yeah.
You know.
That must be an extraordinary experience for you.
Yes. I mean, how come I was so lucky to end up in a partnership with a guy who happens to be married to a psychotherapist who's happens to be so emotionally intelligent himself that he just behaved in the most empathic way.
Yeah, rare and precious gifts. Huh? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, what good fortune.
Yeah.
What did I do to deserve that kind of support, really, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
What
else do you want to draw?
What I really want to say about the year is that it's the year when I experienced, you know, an incredible amount of support.
Mm.
Now, from Adele, you know, I have to say the amount of support she gave me is indescribably large.
Mm.
You know, that doesn't mean she liked it.
No.
That doesn't mean that she, you know, that she sort of was all sweetness and light about it.
Mm-hmm.
She hated, and she hates me be depressed. And, you know, I think our relationship is fortunate to have survived it, just as I feel I'm fortunate to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
There are a number of good... But the amount of support, practical and emotional that I got, it's just been phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have to highlight, I was doing a podcast with Roger Overall called Business Jazz at the beginning of the year, and that was a highlight of 2012, and it was going wonderfully. And without blinking, Roger agreed to carry it on without me during the time when I desperately wanted to be coming back soon. Jane Boyd from the other side of the world over in Vancouver. How could I thank her enough?
I used to listen to them.
Yeah,
to
the two of them. And you know, this day have not listened to them because for technical reasons or various reasons, the podcast is no longer up. It will come back.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the fact that she
and
that wonderful Mark Cotton, sound engineer in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a funny feeling that Marty Constant even did one when Jane couldn't do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, you know, an act of phenomenal generosity to me, I felt, you know. Because I didn't want my whole world to fall apart as I was falling apart, you know.
Right.
If I was going to fall apart, I wanted there to be some good that I had created to carry on. But, of course, how could I ever have expected that they would maintain it for so many months, you know?
Yeah.
Obviously, they all hoped it would be over in, you know, 6 weeks.
Right.
And even I was only prepared to say Paul is off temporarily, you know?
Yeah.
So that, I mean, the Chris Brogan, what a guy. The personal messages that he sent me.
Did he?
Oh, yes, yes. I mean... you know, I kind of wouldn't want to speak about them in the public domain, but I can say, just to say, that that man is, you know, my friend, you know, my friend, and God, what a good friend he has been. I never met him, I never met Jane Boyd, I never met AJ Leon. I mean, in a way, I kind of thought to myself in thinking about this, will I name people? But if I don't name anybody, then nobody gets named at all. But I have to say that those people and the welcome, you mentioned McColgan and others who welcomed me back.
Yeah,
there were there were people who had continuously expressed, without getting a single shred of reply from me, they had expressed their awareness that I was missing, and you know, hoping that I was well.
Yeah.
There were others who were who sort of said to me in various ways vaguely, oh yeah, I don't remember hearing from you for a long time.
Mm.
And you know, I love them all, to be honest, because I think what I love most of all is the variety of people. And if everybody reacted the same way, I would find it boring.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, Trish, that has been, you know, well, that's the caustic, and well, not just the caustic, really, because,
In the almost 2 minutes that we have left, what are some other things that you'd like to say about this year? If you had to sum it up, say in a minute and a half.
I have a certain sadness about the fact that my daughter Grace has gone during this year, and I don't know why. From making stories with me to not wanting to make stories with me. And, you know, that's probably a function of her growing up. It may be a function of my depression. It may be whatever it is. But that's one little sadness. In relation to my mother, and, you know, I love the way she's... This is awfully crude. She's losing her marbles. I just love the way she's doing it. I have learned one thing, and I think I said to you the other day, is I've learned to stop myself asking questions.
Yes. Very wise.
And to pure, unadulterated appreciation of her, how well she's looking, you know, that. I mean, what else can I say? I have finally, at the end of this year, and I am so, so pleased about this, recovered my muse. I've started to write poetry again.
Oh, great.
When I... Yeah. The death of Nelson Mandela, that was the cathartic... thing that got me writing poetry again. I had to write something for Nelson because he meant so much to me. Yeah. And in that sense, I end the year on, you know, what I don't want to call a high.